Hey, and welcome back to another episode of Skillscape. I'm your host, Justin Chu. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to Megan Lam, co-founder and CEO of Neurum Health, a digital health company based in Hong Kong. Neurum utilizes real-time data and behavioral health insights to personalize mental health support. And in this episode, Megan and I have a conversation about the intersect between technology and mental health wellness. Enjoy! Meg, super awesome to have you on the show today. For all the people out there that don't know about the amazing things that you do at Neurum, right? Could you talk us about your journey into entrepreneurship and how you ended up co-founding Neurum Health?
Very happy to share. So I was initially, you know, advising a corporate founded network on their mental health initiative, whilst also doing Entrepreneur First, which is an accelerator, a deep tech accelerator. And it was just a very fateful moment where a hot potato or problem landed in my lap. And I was sort of tasked to figure out or find, you know, solutions that were scalable and sustainable, and couldn't find one. So it was just such a ripe opportunity to build it, you know. And I was very lucky that at the time I also met the yin to my yang, that is my co-founder Caleb. And he, you know, he's just, we often talk about, you know, product market fit, but I really feel so lucky that I've met, you know, Caleb, who really is like the epitome of founder fit.
Founder fit.
Exactly. Yep. Like just personality wise, and in terms of complementary skill sets.
And so like Neurum is really born out of the idea that technology can really aid us and really help us on our mental health journeys, which I'm, you know, a huge believer of that, right? And it really stands out from really the traditional solutions of mental health,
yeah,
right? When it comes to therapy and counseling and, you know, the more physical solutions, mm-hmm, right? So could you talk us through on sort of the value proposition of Neurum and how it stands out from these other solutions in the market?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, with in-person therapy, you know, like things like counseling and EAPs, which is basically like a kind of like a hotline that employees can call up, I feel like solutions have to really match the problem which they're solving. So, you know, you might get people who say like, oh, you know, like with tech, what you're trying to do is like replace these. But what I think we're really trying to do here and is to augment that journey to receiving that level of support. So we're not really trying to replace that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think solutions are really as good as they're used, right?
Yeah.
And so in order for them to be used, you have to have a level of trust and relevancy that speaks to your users. So as much as I really view tech as more like a medium or a vehicle, like a creative vehicle in delivering that support, as opposed to like a solution in and of itself. Like there are other solutions like in-person therapy, EAPs, but engagement has typically been quite low, and
right,
the approach might be more reactive. And what I mean by that is like, you know, someone might have gone through a crisis or something's like happened,
and it's more reactive to it rather than preventive, right?
Exactly, as opposed to being more preventative and being more proactive. So the difference between preventative and preventative is almost like you're on a one-way train of getting sick and you're just preventing that from happening. Whereas now the trend, at least with health and wellness, is to be more proactive. So at Neurum, our ethos is really making sure that our digital behavioral platform, Clara, is designed with the gravitas of science and it's effortless and relevant to users.
Got it.
So I guess what really strikes us apart is the right interactions with research, tech, and design. And that's why Clara is able to be proactive and preventative and very dynamic. So it's truly a partner in people's, you know, mental health, wherever they are and whatever their story is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And personally, I love it when we speak to users and they tell us, you know, before this, we didn't really do much about our mental health before, especially, you know, in East Asian cultures where that, you know, doing something for yourself might seem a little bit selfish, or mm-hmm, they don't view it as a self-investment, but they keep coming back to Clara and they're finding a lot of value in elevating their quality of life.
Yeah, and you know, that really resonates with me in terms of the preventative model rather than a reactive model, because
yeah,
most people conceptualize, you know, their mental health journeys as one that is, you know, you only attend to it after it happens rather
sure,
than it being, you know, it's something that you can always work on continuously every day, you know,
yeah,
and your journey starts now, you know.
Definitely.
There's no other better time than really just getting on board with all that.
Exactly.
You know, that being said though, you know, for everyone that believes in the powers of digital health,
mm-hmm,
right, there's bound to be, you know, a critic or a disbeliever. fever, right? And so I've personally had conversations with people that have the opinion that emotions and mental health can't be quantified. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that forms a barrier to digital health, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that and where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I guess I come from the stance of really believing in it because I co-founded Neuro. But, and previously, my research arena was exactly in, you know, digital mental health. But I guess for, I guess there are different parts to this. So one is like critics, disbelievers, and quantification. So I'll address it in that order.
Yeah.
So for critics, I feel like I'm all for being critical. And especially if you're in this space, you should be critical because you're dealing with people's health and wellness. So I hope the biggest critics are actually in the digital mental health space. As for disbelievers, I think, you know, everyone has their own reasoning. I mentioned before that people might feel like what we're trying to do is actually a replacement of an existing like therapy, for example, which isn't really the case. We're really being more of a value add and augmenting a journey to it. So I think that's the most common, at least, mindset around being a disbeliever, is that chatbots or other tech mediums are going to sort of take over and make something else in the equation redundant.
Right.
So I'd love to have more discussions because maybe I've just self-selected and have a biased network
of
people who are very, you know, gung-ho about more innovative approaches. But I think it's important to actually include and be inclusive of people who might not necessarily be attuned to tech. If, you know, if they have an issue with it, then surely they have their own reasoning. Hmm. And it's important to keep that in mind. Then the last bit is quantification. Now, the thing is, the field has always quantified mental health. So it could be from like validated questionnaires. Uh-huh. So super pen and paper format, or galvanic skin responses to, you know, MRIs, or, you know, measuring your heart rate and things like that. But I think we really have to think about at what the appropriate levels are, and to what end. So I think with quantification, it really comes down to what the use case is and matching the appropriate levels of measurement to that. So for example, if you are a consumer grade product, is it really necessary to have like the most intense like clinical measures in place if that's not sort of the use case that you're right. targeting in the first place?
Uh-huh.
Yep. So it's really striking that balance.
Got it. Yeah. Cool. No, I think those three points, you know, they're important, and I think they form a very healthy sort of conceptualization of, you know, of how you're scaling and building this product, right? And so, you know, what really struck me about Neurum and what I'm really excited to be a part of personally, right, is that kind of using data in the right way, mm-hmm. and sort of harnessing the power of data,
yeah.
right, to really aid with people's journeys and their mental health, right? Could you maybe talk us through on sort of, you know, what this data is like and why is it useful or relevant to what Neurum does?
Yeah, definitely. So we do use things like validated screening questionnaires because that's sort of the gold standard tool that the industry uses. So that's not something Neurum came up with. And we think it's, you know, really important that we have that level of quality and gravitas. We also use sensor-based data. So these are things that, you know, your connected devices might already collect. And these are, you know, things that users are quite used to, and we're sort of used to, we understand sort of like what GPS mm-hmm. data is, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So really striking that balance of what people are comfortable with sharing and sharing with Neurum in understanding their mental health journey and state better. So piecing those together, what we're able to do with that is actually paint a fuller picture of people's mental health and wellness journey, which has historically been quite difficult because you can imagine if you just do one questionnaire today,
it's not going to be a very accurate reflection of that
exactly,
person's mental health.
Exactly, because we're so dynamic.
Right.
So we need, whenever we measure something, we want to be able to, you know, match it up to the exact scenarios in which we're trying to measure, right?
Because yeah.
if you do
yeah.
one questionnaire, all you get is that snapshot and everything else is sort of a bit of a black box.
Right, right.
Yeah.
yeah. So it's not holistic. And I guess that is really sort of the pain point that Neurum is sort of trying to solve around, right?
Yeah.
Painting a more holistic picture, right? To really convey and to have an accurate capturing of, you know, someone's mental health journey.
Yeah,
and I think that
definitely.
That's important. What are the key takeaways from your experiences that you can impart onto other digital health companies to learn from?
Yeah, I think there are two things. One is a strong code of ethics. And the second thing is really design for real people. And I'll delve into each of these a little more.
Yeah.
So with strong code of ethics, I suppose I'll use these 10 guiding principles, which I can't take credit for it. Stanford actually came up with it. But I feel like if you're a digital health company, you should sort of keep these in the forefront of your mind. So things like, you know, products should always work for in terms of their end users' interests, you know, making sure the Hippocratic oaths, like, you know, in medicine, you have do no harm, and making sure, you know, that sort of upholds when you're building digital health products. People shouldn't ever be forced to use anything against their wishes.
Of course.
Yeah. You know, everything that you do in terms of digital health information really has to be centered to improve the user's outcomes and health outcomes. I won't go through like each and every single one but other things like, you know, data security or, you know, violations are reported, communicated, handled appropriately. If people are really interested in having more of a guideline for entrepreneurship, a good friend of mine, and wonderful, highly respected individual, Erica Chern, has also come up with ethics and entrepreneurship. So highly recommend listeners to go check that out.
Sure, I'll definitely include that in the show notes and resources.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Especially if you've been following the Theranos case as well.
Yes.
It'd be a good resource. And the second thing is designing for real people. When you build a digital health company, you need and you're bound to get really smart people that bring their expertise to the table,
mm-hmm.
which they've, you know, spent years and years sharpening those skill sets in.
Yeah.
And sometimes that also means bringing ego to the table as well. So that could be particularly problematic when you're designing digital products and services. So I did a service design talk in November and in essence highlighted that what happens when you get experts that assume what the problems are for end users, or they sort of assume what works in a lab or a controlled environment would work in the real world. Just these sort of like biases that people might, you know, not purposefully include into designing a product could be very problematic, because you might get the big problem picture right because you're an expert, you know, you sort of understand it. But when you start getting more granular, you risk missing the mark in it being really appropriate or helpful or relevant to the end user at that individual level. So be mindful and understand things like culture and everyday behaviors, almost like an anthropological study of your user and the relevant stakeholders in whatever you're building. So I guess those are like my two big takeaways that you should have.
For sure. And, you know, I echo those two takeaways to your first point about the code of ethics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, because the user, the consumer, right, in healthcare and in health tech, they are the biggest stakeholders, right, within, you know, as compared to maybe other industries. And to be able to navigate that and to construct your product around that, right, you would need to have a very strong code of ethics in which you adhere to.
Right?
Because that forms the guiding north of all your decisions to which you base your product off of. And then to your second point, right, when you're saying, you know, how building the right product for the right users,
mm-hmm.
right? You need to, you know, as we've been saying, it's about being holistic and it's about painting the right picture to that, right? What now, like now that, you know, sort of pivoting towards the challenges, or, you know, what were some of the main challenges that you faced in the initial stages of Neurim, right? Be it technical, financial, you know, the product, whatever.
Yeah, I feel like it's always a combination of all those different things at the very beginning of you know, your entrepreneurial journey.
Uh-huh.
But ironically, I feel like with things like the tech, capital or, you know, product development, these are things you can learn. It's a steep learning curve, but you can learn. And it's going to be challenging, but these can be done. I think a key challenge is actually your mental health as a founder, and making sure that you don't run out of steam and you're taking care of yourself. Because the irony is that we're, you know, building a digital behavioral health platform, but sometimes, and we are the best use case when it comes to building Clara, because as founders, you want to do a million and one things. You're, you know, strapped. You have to be as resourceful as possible. You have to get people to believe in you. So I think all of those things can fall into place if you take the right steps and you have the right mindset. But the key thing is really to take care of your mind first and foremost.
Yeah, and I think that taking care of yourself first, that would, you know, naturally lead to you being able to solve the problems, you know, right and better for people, right? Mm-hmm. And so you also, you mentioned before that Neurum also underwent, some changes and in terms of the pivoting before, you know, you guys found stable footing,
yeah.
Right? So what drove these pivots and your decision-making processes behind these changes?
Yeah, I feel like we're always doing, you know, incremental progressions, but I guess there's just like one particular story that I could think of right now. We initially, so this is a product story, I guess, that
yeah,
I'll share.
Yeah.
We initially started, Clara was once upon a time a desktop widget. So meaning you would get your company laptop and Clara would live inside it automatically, mm-hmm. because we just wanted it to be, you know, a seamless thing people get immediately in their hands. However, like we ran into a lot of issues of people, and we're unable to do this, but people worried about, you know, oh my gosh, can you, you know, like read my passwords, or, you know, all these levels of, you know, mistrust and worry, because it's something that was maybe a jump too far ahead. So whenever you're building something, you have to make sure that it fits with people's comfort levels as well, even if that is the direction you're going to take one day. So we came to a screeching pivot on that,
rightfully so, yeah.
And I remember Caleb and I, quite literally, we folded a piece of paper, wrote pros and cons, and one side of the paper was just had a much longer list than the other. But primarily the thing that really sparked that was the decision-making process is always user-driven. It's always been very bottom-up. And also, yeah, it's very like customer driven, very user driven. I think that's also really given us a sense of integrity as well in our steps forward up until this point.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like when you're building a product, right, I think that is something completely different than, yeah. You know, you're out of the lab, you're building a product, it has to be user driven. And so you need to have, you know, that kind of tight feedback loop, right, to ensure,
sure.
that, you know, that it's very regular and you're building something that people are really going to use.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think, you know, one more thing was that in our conversations before, you know, you mentioned an extremely interesting point, right, that fundraising part about it's, mm-hmm. it's not just tough, but then in some way it can also take away the attention from the user and from the mm-hmm. customer, right? Especially when, you know, like we said, the biggest stakeholder in healthcare really comes down to the consumers themselves.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a founder, how have you been able to balance the growth and the sustenance of the company's financial capital while also, you know, balancing the care and attention component part to the users?
Yeah, definitely. I think you have to, as a founder, you have to have clarity. You have to be very clear with your vision and where you're going. Like, you have to be able to look down on your plate and be very clear about what you need to do and be mm-hmm. able to lift your head up as well when you need to as well. And I think in our early stages, and we still are, we always say, you always hear the term lean startup, but Caleb and I internally, we always use the term skeletal startup. So we always make sure that, you know, we're very mindful about our decisions and where we expend our energy and our resources, and making sure that we maximize each opportunity and each step that we take. It's very typical, especially if you're doing something quite new, it's a new market, you have a new technology, for investors to say, hey, like come back when there's more traction, it's a bit too early for us. And this is a very typical answer that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And so take that feedback, and we just focused on our customers,
mm-hmm.
And really built up our headway from there. And that really spoke for itself, because, and it's almost like if you focus on your core business and you focus on your customers and they love you, it I feel like the conversations with investors do come
naturally.
Smoothly. It comes naturally.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. No. And you know what, Megan, I think these are really great insights that you've highlighted. I'm sure, you know, digital health companies, you know, on the come up would definitely be able to take something away from this episode. I want to wrap things up by also just giving you a little explanation of what Scalescape is really about, right? It's a, you know, what the title of the podcast is. And, you know, when you're breaking down the words scale and scape, right, intrinsic to building a product and scaling that, right, you're taking into account geography, you know, timing, product market fit, all these kinds of external factors in the landscape. What is one tip that you have for founders to scalescaping their companies towards success?
I feel like first and foremost, always start with a global mindset. Always start with a global mindset. Don't lock yourself in, because that's likely the situation you might find yourself in. So really thinking about, you know, what's useful for people, and B, don't landlock yourself into the very spot geographically where you're at.
Mm. So being adaptable to change and adaptable to innovation.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely.
Great. Anyways, for those of you that don't know, Neuroimp Health is also coming out with another podcast that I'm hosting and producing called Have You Eaten? So stay tuned for that. Links and will all be in the show notes. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and to let me know your thoughts and your comments on how to make this better for you. Looking forward to hearing your guys' opinions, and I'll see you next time.